Hi, I'm Trevor Cochran and welcome to The Garden Gurus Live. It's our weekly show where Joanne Harris and I share seasonal garden advice. We feature a variety of garden lovers from all over Australia and the world, and we give you the opportunity to interact and ask your garden questions. To join the chat live and ask your gardening questions, all you need to do is like The Garden Gurus Facebook page and tune in every week. This live stream is brought to you by Sunpalm, Troforte and Garden Express. Sunpalm Australia is a leading market-orientated, research and development-driven and progressive company specialising in producing and supplying a huge range of plastic and fertiliser products that cater to the needs of customers from the landscape, nursery, garden, forestry, agriculture and horticulture industries. Their mission is to transform your garden into a picturesque oasis. So head to sunpalmaustralia.com.au and learn more about them.
Well, hello. Welcome to The Garden Gurus Live. I'm Trevor Cochran. It's great to be with you this morning. It is a beautiful sunny day here in Perth, but we've had a lot of rain coming through over the past week, and it's been fantastic for gardens. And I know all around the country we're seeing quite different conditions. I think Melbourne is spectacular today because we've already had a little comment from Tyson from Barone. He said it's a beautiful day in Barone, which is fantastic. Of course, today we've got a great show. It's all about answering your gardening questions, but we've got some terrific prizes. So don't forget, there's that amazing gift pack from Troforte. It's valued at $250. That will sustain the average garden for a year. So if you want to win this prize, listen out for the code word. We will share it later on in today's show. And then head to the Troforte Facebook page. You've got to like it and then put in the code word and you're in the running. And also, of course, towards the end of the show today, we'll come up with a fantastic plant price for you. A bit of online shopping with our friends at Garden Express where you can get a super special deal. And I know what it is this week and you will love it. They're absolutely beautiful. And, of course, we're also going to give away a $50 gift voucher to the very best garden question today. And, again, that's thanks to Garden Express. The great thing about Garden Express is that you can shop 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whenever you want, from the comfort of your armchair. It is that easy. Now, there's a couple of things you need to do for me when you send in your questions. Please tell me where you are from. Really does make a big difference as to where my answers might come from. And also, just if you're in, let's say, New South Wales, big states like WA, and you're in the north, make sure you let me know roughly the town or the nearest point. It does help me when I'm trying to help you. Now, we do have a heap of questions coming through. In fact, they've been flying through, and there's a lot of you have been very proactive sending us some photographs. It really does help when we sort of basically want to sort of answer your questions and be really precise. Okay, let's go to our very first question. And good friend of the show, and it's lovely to have you join us again this morning, Glenn Miller. Now, Glenn has sent some photos in. Let's have a look. Now, can you see that? That is actually what we call a Zamia palm or a sago palm, and it's got a particularly interesting problem. Now, Glenn's written in to say, I call it macrozamia, but I'm not sure if it is. It's not a macrozamia. This is very interesting. This is a very, very beautiful cycad, and it's got a particular problem. It's a friend's. It doesn't look like it's been looked after by the previous owners. Can you suggest how to look after it? You're on the Gold Coast. Now, this is a really interesting plant. This is Cycas revoluta, and Cycas revoluta originates from Mexico. And where it grows, it actually is fairly free-draining soil, but the soils are rich in nutrients. And these guys really need lots of micronutrients. So not so much the macro ones, but those micro ones are the ones that stop it getting what it's got here. And this is what we call frizzy leaf. It's effectively an infection or a disease as such, or it's a disease created as a consequence of a lack of nutrients. So this is where you need to be putting in all your micronutrients. So right now I would suggest that you actually go grab yourself some trace elements, and literally I would almost have a handful, and I would be spreading them around the outside. Then I'd wash them in thoroughly. you're not going to fix the problem with the existing leaves. The plant is going to have to flush new leaves. But when the new leaves come through, it shouldn't have this problem. So that'll make a big difference. Little fun fact for you. You mentioned about macrozamia. Well, zamia palms, which those are the ones that are actually native to Australia, they've been around for at least 280 million years. Certainly were alive through the period of dinosaurs and have been found in fossilised remains. What I find fascinating about these plants is that they are actually they're actually highly toxic, and the poison that they have in them has been extracted by Indigenous Australians for probably 20 to 30,000 years. Then they use the seed actually to sort of create a kind of damper, actually a kind of bread. But then they also take the toxin and they use that in hunting. Now, the toxin's called cyacin, and ingested, it'll cause gastrointestinal discomfort. And certainly early farmers to Australia were discovering when their cattle would eat the leaves of these plants, and then they would get very, very upset stomachs. A lot of them would die as a consequence of the poison. But Indigenous Australians worked out how to get that poison out, and it was through infusing the seeds, basically peeling the outside shell off, putting them in water, soaking them, ideally in running water, would then allow the toxin to be actually drained out completely before they would dry the seed and turn it into a kind of flower, and that would be the thing. So it's a really amazing story. How they worked it out, I've got no idea, but it's certainly something that when the first settlers came from Europe here, they were also suffering these problems. They would see the Aboriginals eating those seeds. They would collect the seeds and try and use them the same way and get sick. And it was only just through Indigenous people sharing their knowledge that actually saved a lot of people's lives. It's pretty crazy. Glenn's also included an extra photo of a weed that he asked us about. We talked about it last week, and it really does. It's still not quite clear to me, but it does look like an ageratum, which is actually quite possible. It's an annual plant, and it certainly the little pom-pom flowers that I can see from these photographs do look like that. But as I suggested, if it's in lawn, spraying with weed and feed is actually going to burn this out. It's a broadleaf plant, and pretty much all the broadleaves affected by that weed and feed formula. So that should help. June LaFrance is in Jervis Bay in New South Wales, and she sent us some photographs too. Could this be sooty mould on my standard lily pili? There are loads of ants up and down the trunk also. It's only affecting this particular plant. The other standard is doing well. So these are standard lily pilies. You can see the close-up photos here, and it is definitely sooty mould. But sooty mould in itself is not really a problem. It can be washed off. The reason it's forming has got to do with those ants. What the ants are doing, if you have a look, you'll see these little brown spots underneath the leaf of the lily pili, and those little brown spots are scale. And the ants are farming the scale. And in return for protecting the scale from predators, the scale emits this little sucrosy substance called honeydew from their rear end. The ants actually use that as a food source. But in the process of harvesting it, their bodies get covered with it. And as they move up and down the stem and across the leaves, they start spreading that honeydew as well as they're moving. Now, that honeydew is a food source for the sooty mould. So what you've got to do is you've got to stop two things from happening. We've got to ideally get rid of the scale, and two, we've got to stop the ants from going up and down the stem. Now, first of all, getting rid of the scale, white oil, horticultural oil, any of those oils will be very effective. But you have to spray over, you have to do a nice, decent coating. Don't do it on a hot day. You've got to do it on a day under 25 degrees and give it a really good coating. That'll smother over the scale and smother the scale, and they will die. They might still be on the stem, but they'll be dead. The bit that you've got to stop is the ants bringing more in. So the way to stop ants from traversing up and down the stem, you can do a few things. You can just get some little petroleum jelly, so just a little bit of that around the base, Vaseline or whatever around the base of the plant, probably about that much. The ants won't cross over that to move up and down the stem. You can also use talcum powder. Ants hate talcum powder. So talcum powder around the base of the plant, and they won't cross over that. It kind of gets into their arm or in the joints of their legs and arms and irritates them, so they won't cross that line. So that'll stop the ants. The white oil will stop the scale, and then just a good – what will happen is actually the sooty mould will use up all the sugars that's sitting on the stem, and because there's no more coming, it'll eventually die off, and you can just wash it off. It sounds a little long-winded, but that's exactly what's going on. It's the remarkable nature of the way animals work. So, you know, one in a symbiotic relationship is protecting the other, and effectively they're farming it. It's incredible. Ants can be a good thing, but they can also be problematic. Okay, Kang Liao in Perth. Kang's a big fan of ours and supports us all the time. You brought up about your native hibiscus, and you've sent us a photograph, and I did have a look at it, and guess what? You've definitely got this is quite a significant problem. Definitely when you're looking at that, you've definitely got some kind of root rot going on there. In fact, it's more likely a collar rot around the base of the stem. Highly unlikely this plant is going to come back, Kang. Bad news. I'm sorry. I could recommend you try, you know, Yates anti-rot or one of those fungal treatments, but I think this is too far gone. And I don't think it's going to come back. So that might be just one you have to write off, I'm afraid. Bad news. Tyson, good morning to you, and thanks so much for your questions. Can I please plant a peanut butter tree in the ground or somewhere else? Can you give me some advice? Now, I don't know whether you know these plants. This is an unusual tropical, Tyson, and generally it produces these little fruit, and they taste just like peanut butter, which is how it obviously gets its name. Not a large growing plant as a general comment, so it could be grown in a large tub, but in the ground is probably best, but it needs to be in full sun. Really important to give it a nice sunny spot and try and protect it if you can during the winter months, because I think it might be a little susceptible to cold weather. Helen, let's have a look. You're in Melbourne, in Adelaide. Thanks so much. My rhubarb stalks are very thin. Actually, Helen, so are mine this year. A little bit of that's got to do with the fact that I didn't feed them before they've taken off. So I've got a lot of growth, but not big, thick ones. And the big, thick ones will come when you're using a fertilizer that's high in potash and also phosphorus. So the combination of those. So, you know, when you're looking at your fertilizer on the shelf in the store, it's always got an analysis. And the analysis says NPK, and then it'll have all micronutrients below. In this particular instance, you want a higher P and a higher K. In fact, much higher K and a higher P than the average fertilizer would be. You don't want too much because that can also be problematic, but what you're really looking for is a fertilizer that's specialized to promote flower or fruiting, and that will help these rhubarb stalks get a lot thicker. All you're going to do is build up the base of the plant. That's really the key. So hopefully that helps you a little bit. We have a little technical issue going on here, but that's okay. I'm going to keep working my way through whilst we work on that. Carolyn Lothian, you are in Melbourne, and you would like to know I just lost you. I'll just come back to you. You'd like to know what is the best liriope to grow as a border under standard roses. Do you know what? Most of the liriopes are fantastic. I'm a big fan of all of them. They all perform pretty well, particularly in Melbourne. It's one of those places where the temperatures are not too extreme and growing under a standard rose is ideal. So to be quite honest, if you went for the giant liriope, you're going to end up with a lovely big, you know, sort of flowing sort of plants underneath your standard roses, so that should help. Let's have a look here. Let's go down to Leah Robinson. You sent a message about oxalis in the lawn. It seems to be taking over every winter. What is the best way to control it? You're in Brisbane. Oxalis can be, and it depends on which one you've got, but to be honest, they're all treated the same way. So weed and feeds are really effective. Good way to actually sort out exactly what's in there that's got a broadleaf, and that'll solve those sorts of problems. Glenda Blewett. Glenda, I'm not sure where you are. What you've asked me, though, is a very interesting question. Glenda has asked, when can I dig up my naked ladies? They're in a big clump. Now, naked ladies are amaryllis. They're a type of bulb. And now's not the time to do it because they should be in flower. But if they've finished flowering, then maybe it's not such a bad idea to give them a go. So we might think about that. Tahani Gorda, thank you. You're in Perth, close to the beach. Am I better planting off all my bulbs in pots? Tahani, as a general comment, I would say absolutely. If you've got those beach sands, a lot of the bulbs are not going to get a lot out of it unless you've enriched your soil a lot. And in Perth is a product called Soil Solver. It's a type of clay. Now, there's two types of clay, fundamentally, two sort of basic chemical structures. One is called, it'll come to me in a second, Kaolin is the first one I'm going to talk about. The second one is one that tends to cluster, and I've just got a blockage in my brain, but it's not the one to go for. The one you want to go for is kaolin clay. And the reason for that is kaolin it's the same one that's actually used to make ceramics, etc., but it's really easy to apply into a soil in powder. What it does in this powder form, you can then get an even mix through the sand, and it binds sand particles together. And it creates a kind of effect when you put organics in with it that's very similar to a loam soil. So when you're, you know, in a beach environment, you tend to have very deep sandy sort of soils. Putting in this loam layer will hold moisture and nutrients in around the roots. So if you're putting bulbs into that, they'll do pretty well. So it depends what preparation you've done. If you haven't done a lot of preparation, my recommendation, do them in pots. Best way to go. All right, we are back up. We had a little technical issue with the computer shutting down, but doesn't matter. That's okay. We've got lots and lots of questions coming through. Let's go to Karen and Rolly Stone. Hello, Karen. I've got a few frangipanis which look healthy and have great leaf growth, but sadly, rarely flower. Easy solution, Karen, back off the nitrogen. They're putting on growth. So high nitrogen fertilizers, garden fertilizers, tend to encourage them to produce a lot of growth. They will produce flower if you don't feed them at all and if you back off the water, and particularly when they go dormant, sort of at the end of winter in Western Australia, they'll go dormant, drop their leaves, and at that moment in time, try and stop any sort of additional water. Turn the irrigation off and just let them go into a little bit of stress. When they stress, the first instinct is to produce seed so that the plants continue on. It's our natural instinct. And, of course, to produce seed, they'll have to produce masses of flower. That's the trick. It's like a good husband, you know, treat them mean, keep them keen is the story I've been told. Jez Barnes, you're on the east coast of Tasmania. Hello, Jez. Good morning from the East Coast. I've got a cactus that's got rust on its leaves. What could this be? Now, that's really interesting. Rust on cactus, cactus with leaves is unusual for a start, so I suspect that it's probably more a euphorbia or one of those kind of epiphytic cactus. As far as rust goes, generally you can get in cooler conditions, and this will, East Coast, I'm thinking about it, maybe quite cool. You can get what's actually a bacteria. It's called bacterial speck. It's a bacterium called Pseudomonas, and it's very common in water. So particularly tap water, you'll find Pseudomonas tends to exist in that quite commonly, or in tank water. And if you're watering over the foliage, it can spread and it can cause rots. And that it looks like rust, but in actual fact, it's actually a rot. I suspect that's what you've got. And there's not a lot you can do. What you can do to bring it back down and control it is to apply a copper-based spray over the top. So something like Coside, which you'll find in your local garden centre, spray it over the foliage, tends to clear off bacterial speck. And if it really is a rust, and what I'd suggest you do is send us a photograph, it will help me identify it, then you do treat it quite differently. But again, it is a fungicide, so you'll get that from your local garden centre as well. Cherie is in Victoria. Cherie's always supporting us. I've been having a competition for the last 2 years with my neighbour who can grow the best perfume Princess Daphne plant. Now, if you know Daphne, Perfume Princess is one of those amazing new releases. It's relatively new anyway. It was brought out by Anthony Tesla. It's a stunning plant. And over the last 2 weeks, the leaves have been vigorously falling off. Now, I found small webs on it, pretty sure it's spider mites, hosed and wiped every remaining leaf left, I'd say, and sprayed with Eco Pest Oil. Pretty sure it's not root rot. Being in a terracotta pot, looks like I've lost my bet with my neighbour. Oh, that's no good, Cherie. But you've done all the right things. Now, if you've seen small webs, it's probably the only pest of any consequence to Daphne Perfume Princess. It really does get knocked around by spider mites. So if you've had it, the interesting thing is you're in Victoria. We're moving into cooler conditions. Spider mite is about to go dormant. They'll go down into the soil, lay their eggs there and sort of sit there until the weather warms, and then they'll come up. What I would suggest you do is probably make sure you spray again round about October, November, maybe November, or do exactly what you've just done, which is really the most effective treatment for spider mite. I'm sorry, you're going to lose your bet on this one. Nikki Roberts, you're in Perth. Good morning. It's a beautiful, beautiful day here in Perth, and you've brought up about your lychee tree. It's got brown edges on the leaves. Is it sunburn or is it something else? You've sent a pic through Messenger. Not sure what the right way is to send pics. Thank you very much for doing that. I don't need to see the pic to know what the problem is with this. With lychees, particularly when they're juvenile, they do get that burning around the outside edge. Now, more often than not, it's actually got to do with salts in the soil burning the roots, and the outside of the leaves are a reflection of the very outside roots not being 100% happy. Can I suggest that you get some sea salt and you drench the soil around the outside of that tree with sea salt, and you also apply some of it over the foliage. Now, just make sure you're doing it at the right strength as far as the recommendation goes. So follow that carefully, but put that over the foliage. Definitely soak the ground. It is going to help. When you're feeding, use controlled-release fertilisers. It's really important. These fast-release mineral-based fertilisers can really burn all the good beneficial bacteria in the soil. You know, when we talk about Troforte, it's one of those great examples. Another one's Osmocote, but, you know, the controlled release, they're releasing small amounts on a regular basis, so that should help an awful lot. Hopefully that's going to support you. Tahani Gelder in Perth, close to the beach. Oh, no, we did this one, and we did Carolyn. Leah, you asked about the oxalis in your lawn. This is great. We're catching up. Terrific. Now, let's keep moving through. Okay, Glenn Miller, great feedback, mate. What an answer, amazing. Thank you, Trevor. This is why we need you answering our questions and adding to our information bank. Wonderful. Thanks again. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for all your support. It's really important. We are just a family business, and we do work very, very hard to try and support everybody who follows us. And we've got a small team, but very dedicated. Now, I'm getting a little warning here, just telling me that we might have an issue. But no, we're live. Everything's good. Yes, the team here are letting me know it's all good. All right, so let's keep moving on with some questions. Gary Kimberley from Melbourne. Actually, I'm heading to the Kimberleys next week, Gary. So I'll be coming to you hopefully from Broome next Friday. Gary is in Melbourne, however, and currently he has Nellie Kelly passion fruit. It's 2 years old. The leaves keep going yellow. The local nursery advised to add poultry manure around the base. Done this a number of times. The yellow leaves keep coming up and returning. Now, having a quick look at that picture that you sent through, Gary, the nursery gave you bad advice. It's very unusual for nurseries to do this, but poultry manure is extremely alkaline. Now, if you're in an acidic soil, it's fine. Or if you're in a pH-neutral soil, it's fine. But when you're applying these sorts of things, what you are going to see is a big problem. You'll start seeing stuff, dropping out. I've got people helping me along the way here. I'll explain what I mean in a second. But look, what you actually need is fertilizer that's more acidic. So you're trying to balance your pH to be somewhere around 6.5 to 7, so slightly on the acidic side on the pH scale. To do that, you do not apply anything that's highly alkaline, which is chicken manure. You want to have something that's been pH balanced, or alternatively is more on the acidic side. Now, I wouldn't normally suggest one of these kinds of fertilizers, but I'm going to suggest that you get sulfate of potash. You buy it in small, like 1 kg bags, and for your passion fruit, it's going to do wonders. What it's going to do is actually stimulate a lot of flower, but it's also going to turn the foliage a nice dark green. You can boost a little bit with iron as well, sulfate of iron. So there's a couple there that you can use. When you apply it, really wash it into the ground, put it around the outside edge of the drip zone too. So that's where the passion fruit is extending to. Hopefully that helps a little bit. Okay, let's keep rolling along. Nola Taylor, you've sent us some pics. Hoping you help with my staghorn. Last year during the storm, it fell on the side. It fell, and the side of the face was terribly impacted. Tried to seek help in a number of sites, but there's not a lot of luck. I also tried to see, tried the following, I think it's, I've tried the following season. potassium and other, I think you meant sea salt, potassium and other fertilizers. Not all at once, so it's been over a period of time. I've had it for years and it would be sad to lose it now. Nola, I've got a suggestion for you. It's going to be the last thing that you would have thought of doing, but having a look at the damage to the plant, you can see it's been bruised, but it's not damaged where the growth, the new growth will come from. So what you need to do is get it to put out a new shield, remembering that staghorns are actually a fern. Now, they don't like a lot of fertilizer, particularly if you're putting anything in a concentrate form. So the way to feed them, the old days used to be fish emulsion. So fish emulsion is quite an effective fertilizer for them. But I'll suggest something a little bit different. I'll suggest you go and get a kilo of bananas, peel them all, take the banana skins and stuff them in the back of the plant. That will actually put all the potassium and phosphorus that this plant needs to put out a new growth flush, and that's a lovely, soft, natural, organic way of the plant producing new growth. So hopefully that helps you. Give that a try. Helen King is from Tasmania. My Spirit of Peace rose was attacked by wallabies. It's recovered a lot. Should I repot it as there is now some new growth? What a problem. What a problem. That is a cool problem in that wallabies are often, they do get, I don't know why, wallabies and kangaroos do love roses, and it's generally the new growth. What you really need to do is make sure you protect this new growth now as it comes out. I wouldn't repot at the moment. I would let it sort of recover and try and put some new growth. It will go dormant, obviously, as we move into the winter period. So if you're going to do any repotting, it's probably going to be October. I would suggest you look at doing that. Hopefully that helps. Let's have a look. Can all flower bulbs be planted now? Carol, all spring flowering bulbs can be planted now. You don't want to be putting summer bulbs in, so now's not the time to be putting in things like dahlias, for example, which really are tubers anyway. But the spring flowering bulbs, so, you know, that's the jonquils and the daffodils and the hyacinths and tulips, they all should be going in now. In fact, you've probably got your last chance to do some planting. We are about to mass plant out my garden beds right now at home with a lot of beautiful bulbs that have come in from my order from Garden Express. And the bulbs are really of a very high quality. And a lot of people think about trying to set the flower. So you think that putting them in the crisper is required. But in actual fact, all that work's been done. The flower is already set inside the bulb. All you have to do is plant your bulbs. More often than not, a little bit of bulb planting fertilizer will help. That tends to be something high, again, in that P and K, definitely not high in N. So when you're looking at your fertilizer balance, make sure you're always checking that. If you want to promote flower and fruit, you're looking for higher P, higher K, and definitely lower N. If you want to promote growth, you're looking for higher N, higher nitrogen. That encourages leaf and foliage growth. Hopefully that helps, Carol. Tyson, you got a second question for us. Can I please plant hibiscus in the ground or somewhere else? Can you give me some tips? Right, so hibiscus, as a general comment, are actually coming into the best time of the year for flowering. So all your hibiscus all over the country should be flowering pretty well at the moment. You should be smothered in flowers, actually. They will, like, probably places like Perth and Brisbane will continue right through until mid to late June, before they start to go into a bit of a dormancy kind of a state, and then they get themselves through the winter months. What I would suggest to you, Tyson, is that you leave your hibiscus in a pot through the winter and then plant in the warmer weather. So two things with hibiscus: when you are getting into longer days, so the longer daylight hours, which is obviously from late June onwards, that's when there's more light, there's more foliage growth. And so that is the vegetative stage of a plant's growth. They're putting more on around that period of time. That's when you put things like hibiscus into the ground. When the days get shorter with hibiscus, they produce lots and lots of flowers. They like the cold as well to trigger that flowering process. So interestingly enough, we think of them purely as a tropical plant. And yes, they will flower through the summer, but they'll be prolific, particularly the Hawaiian varieties, this time of the year. Hopefully that helps. Claire Jenkins in Caversham, one of my favourite places. So I always go to Caversham Wildlife Park. Love that place. It is absolutely brilliant. I've just sprayed my couch for winter grass. There's no rain forecast in Caversham for the next week. how long should I wait to mow? Okay, you sprayed it for winter grass. Okay, I would suggest it's probably early for you to be doing that. There's definitely some growth of winter grass seedlings. You can see that germination, but it's not really going to be that bigger. So I probably wouldn't mow for a week, just purely to let the chemical do its job. We also, you raise here that we spoke previously about vertimowing in spring. What will reduce the height of the lawn? Our feet sink an inch when we step into the, okay, I get it. So it's very soft and spongy. And that can be a problem. What I would suggest you do is probably just cut down low and hard just at the moment. We're still in April. We've really got another month and a half of reasonable growth. You should get, you will knock it back, but you should get all full recovery as a consequence. Certainly when you do it, mow down hard, leave it for a week, then give it a feed. And I would give it a liquid feed. And there's this Troforte Hose-On liquid that you can get. I would actually use that in this particular instance. It's a lot faster acting initially, and then it'll support growth, sustain growth through the winter months afterwards as well. And it's taken in through the foliage, so that should help the plants a lot. Glenda Blewett, hello, Glenda. You asked me actually about the naked ladies, and I would wait until they've completely finished flowering, and then I would look at taking them, splitting them up, and they'll split up really well, so don't worry about that. Bronwyn Courtenay, you are you're in New South Wales, photo included. We've got Moraya hedges, okay. They don't seem to blossom at all. Don't overwater each day, as I heard they don't like a lot of water, which is exactly true. Though now they're six years old and they've never flowered. I recently put Dynamic Lifter on the soil. Is there something I'm not doing to get them flowering? It's probably they're not getting stressed. It sounds to me like one of the problems with watering them too much is they just tend to put on lots of growth. If you're feeding them with something like Dynamic Lifter, a little higher in nitrogen, it's going to encourage more growth. So you want to look at those flower-promoting fertilizers. They're all to go for. I think that's all it is. But I would try probably just not to water and not to feed too much. Let them stress a little bit. As soon as they're stressed, they'll produce flowers. It's a complete natural reaction to stressful conditions to reproduce, and that's what they're doing. So, treat them like the Good Husband story, treat them keen. Moraya's are a remarkable plant. I just love it. It's one of my favourite plants that you can get. Okay, how are we going here? We've got Bronwyn there. Let's move down to, we've got a lot coming through. Thank you. Nick Pavlidis, you're in Melbourne and we've got a photo included. Is that one going up, Shelley? Yeah. Not seeing it on my screen, that's all. So that's okay. What we'll do is in my grass at the front, there's a gap hole. I try to fill it with some soil. Okay, let's have a look here. I think we're back. We are back. Apologies. We're having a little bit of a technical challenge here, but such is life. That's the risk with broadcast. Sorry, Nick, you asked a question about this spot. We now have this lawn of yours. It's very broad. I can't really see this gap, this hole you're talking about. It's not quite really descriptive. But basically, it has grass, but every time I put sand there, the grass grows and the ground sinks. It suggests that you've got something under there that's leaking. If you've got irrigation, that is a common problem. It'll keep washing the sand and compacting underneath and the thing will drop. There could be water leaking underneath that spot. It would be worth digging up and just checking to have a look. It could be something like an old tree stump or something slowly rotting and slowly sort of dropping, and you might just need to keep topping up with sand just to get that. You might need to just dig that out and have a bit of a look, Nick. Sorry, I can't help much more than that, but do check to make sure you don't have a water leak. Kerry Wilkin is in Perth. Found a strange mound in my garden in Ellenbrook. It's so weird. Any idea what it is? Okay, I do know what it is. That is a fungus, and it's a very common thing this time of the year to get this one. This is a family of these, and they're often called stinkworts, which probably gives away what they smell like. They don't smell good, and that is probably what the main issue is. So I would suggest that you just put up with it, because all it's doing is eating organic matter, and it's a completely natural one. It's not going to hurt anything. It just probably doesn't look so good. So you can just rake them away if you want, but they're not hurting anything. It's just Mother Nature at her very, very best. Hopefully that Kerry McClure's in Rolling Stone. I've got two bleed vines in pots, one pink, one white. The white flowers are turning pink. Is there something I should be feeding it? I didn't notice this happening last year when they flowered. Now, the difference probably between the two, or what's actually happened, is that I suspect with the bleeding heart vine, you have a little tiny white flower, but you have a bract around the outside. You can have it pink or you can have them quite white. But when conditions are a lot cooler, when they're in flower, you tend to get a pink blush through all of them. Doesn't matter whether it's the white one or the pink one. Now, that bract blush, that pink that you're seeing, is a very, very common thing in cooler conditions. And that's what I think you have going on here. I think we've had a lot cooler start to the autumn than we would normally have, and I think it's showing up. It's definitely not a fertilizer. It's definitely not a plant reverting. It's just one of those things. So hopefully that helps. Barbara has asked, anything I can do to stop grasshoppers from eating all the leaves on my orange tree? And Barbara, the answer is yes. You can get a bran bait. I'm not sure where you're from, so whether it's available for you, if you're in another part of Australia. In Western Australia, there's one called David Gray's Cricket and Grasshopper Killer. It is a bran bait in a box that you'll buy. You spread that around, the grasshoppers will eat that bran and it'll kill them off. The only other thing to do, of course, is to jump in by hand and pick them off. We had quite a few attacking the new growth of my young mango trees, and so we just went through and picked them all off, and they're gone. And that's the best way to control it. Dee Marsden is in Perth. Hi, Dee. Just collected some teddy bear magnolia seeds from my plants. The question is, what do I do with them now? Well, Dee, good question. What you do right at the moment is sit them and let them dry in a dark, cool spot over the winter months, and then come springtime, plant them in a seed raising mix. It's that easy, and they will germinate. You may get plants that are true to the parent, so like exactly like teddy bear, but you might also get a variance. All sorts of things can happen, and you never know what you're going to get. They do take quite a bit of time when grown from seed to produce flowers. Just be aware of that. Sometimes it can be up to 7 years. Okay, Craig Phillips from the Macedon Ranges. Beautiful part of the world, Craig, and thanks very much for supporting us. You're new to the show. You've been catching up with the older podcasts on Spotify, which we do put our Garden Gurus Live broadcast up on Spotify, so you can follow up later on. Good point. Thank you. You're up to the start of 2022 and loving it. Thank you very much. My question is, can you recommend an edible tree that also provides some summer shade? Would a persimmon be suitable, or am I better to go for a mulberry? What can you recommend as far as variety goes? Okay, mulberries. Hang on. We'll go back. Persimmons. Absolutely fantastic plant, and we know them as persimmons in Australia, in Asia, Korea, and particularly in Japan, they're known as kaki fruit. I just love them, and there's two types. There's astringent and non-astringent. Now, the astringent ones tend to be soft, and when you eat them, they're sweet, but they also leave a kind of furry taste. It's what we would describe as an acquired taste. The non-astringent ones are crunchy. You eat them like an apple, and they are fantastic. And there's a whole bunch of different varieties that are really good. I love persimmon trees. There's two reasons I love them. One is that they are a deciduous tree. So come autumn time, they do put on the best autumn color that you'll see. They're one of the very best autumn color trees. When they drop their leaves, particularly the astringent versions, they hold the fruit on the tree. So then they look like lanterns all around the outside of the tree, hanging on long after the leaves have fallen off. So I suppose if I was going to say anything, I would say to you, I would go for a persimmon personally. As far as mulberries go, if there was a recommendation, I would be recommending you go for probably one of the chartreuse, and I'm a big fan of the chartreuse red, which is a more compact form. The white chartreuse mulberry is produced a big, long, very sweet fruit by the millions, but it's a big tree. And controlling that growth is a big deal. So that's just something you need to keep in mind. The old-fashioned black English mulberry is still probably the best when it comes to the quality of the fruit, in my mind. Mattia Jarenda, you are in Balcombe Hills in New South Wales. I love this part of the world, and you've got something actually quite interesting. You've got a red coconut in a pot growing. When should I put it in the ground, or should I keep it in the pot? How do I prepare the ground for a coconut tree? I'm not so sure how coconut's going to grow in Balcombe Hills. I would leave it in the pot definitely through the cooler months. I would only plant it in the warmer months. The thing about coconuts is that they won't grow in temperatures where the soil gets colder than 10 degrees Celsius during the winter. So it's really how cold you get there that will determine whether you can plant it into the ground. Certainly you can grow them in pots quite well, but if you're going to plant it in the ground, wait till summer. Wait until you're coming into the warmest time of the year, then put it in, because it'll encourage it to grow roots really quickly, get established, and hopefully get itself through the next winter. And if you can survive two or three winters, it should actually sort of become accustomed to the conditions and actually grow. Whether that produces fruit in the future, I'm not sure, but it's a great question. That's probably one of our best questions we've had today. Bit of a challenge and very interesting. Thank you. Okay, let's come back to WA for a moment. Kerry's in Rolleystone, planted pumpkins and cucumbers at the beginning of the season. They seem to flower a lot, but the flowers either fell off or bitten off, but not eaten. My husband seems to think it's the quenders. It's not quenders. Quenders are bandicoots, for those people who are not sure what they are. Definitely not quenders. They don't like the flowers. It's more likely a pollination issue, to be quite honest. And what I would recommend you do is look at maybe planting a flowering plant around the outside. Now, you could do something bright next time, maybe put some marigolds or calendulas in. They bring the bees in from miles away. They're probably my recommendation. You plant them together. So this is where we call companion planting, and it's where beneficial plants help each other. The bright yellow of the marigolds will attract the bees in. The bees will also do a pollination thing with the pumpkins. And a lot of the cucurbits are like that. The only other thing it could be, and you need to be conscious of it, is that cucurbits will often still flower, but they will drop their flowers if the conditions are actually very shady. So if you're getting afternoon shade over them, you're really going to struggle to actually get fruit. You need to have just full sun, most open, warmest position you can get, and then you'll get pollination, then you will get good crops. Hopefully that helps. Let's go to Brisbane. Leah. Hello, Leah. Welcome to the show today. Thank you. What's the best way to control oxalis in lawns? Oxalis and lawns, I think we brought this up before. Oxalis and lawns, definitely hose on weed and feed. That really does the job. Now, let's go to East Cannington. We're back across the country here in Western Australia. Albert has written to us. He bought these tulip bulbs online. Oh, dear. Okay. Now, they've got blotches. Some of them look like they might be rotten or scorched. One bulb's even shriveled terribly until it's barely recognisable. It's really disappointing, Albert. I'm wondering what happened to them. I can tell you what I think it is. They look to me like they're bruised. It's probably the handling process. I'm not sure where you've got them from, but there's definitely bruising all over them, and that's where you get bacteria and fungi come in and damage them. And he's put a note in saying, I really regret not buying them from Garden Express. And, that's unfortunate, mate. Garden Express, I've just got all my bulbs from Garden Express. They're pure white all around the outside. There's no bruising. It's because of the way they handle them and the way they dig them. This is just basically, they've been rough handled, and they're bruised and they're damaged. Funny thing is, plant them out because they'll probably still produce flowers, probably just not quite as good as they should be. But, yeah, that's unfortunate. But that's why you go to reputable people like the people from Garden Express. Now, I've got a plant of the week, and I want to share it with you. This, you would have seen it in the photograph. Does anybody know? Type like crazy. Do you know what this plant is? It is one of my absolute favourites, and I've just shown you a huge bunch. I'm going to show you one individually. Do you know what this are? This is a good question. This is a good question. Have you seen that flower before? That's what they look like. And there's the three stages. When they start off, they're kind of creamy white with a little bit of purple to them. Then they end up getting lovely purple as they open up. And when they age, they get a golden colour. And that's an aged one that's just fallen off this. They're absolutely gorgeous. And it's a vine. So I'm trying to give you as many hints as I can. And guess what? There is a great guess straight away. That is about as mature as you'll get. You can see it right there. Tahini Gorda, you got it right. Absolutely. And Tyson Sanders, you did the same thing. It is the most exquisite perfumed climber that you'll get. It's called the Snail Creeper. And I've got this in a large pot outside my door, and I've just collected a big couple of big bunches of these flowers this morning. And they just cascade down out of the climber. They are absolutely gorgeous. It's known as Phaseolus, and it's a really beautiful member of the pea family. Now, it produces these flowers in huge clusters in the autumn. So as the days get shorter, this triggers the flowering process for this plant. And it's not a common plant to get hold of. You really do have to actually ring around. It tends to be independent garden centres. You can see just here, this is the seed pod. And the best way to get them is to obviously to get a seed pod. So this one I picked a little bit early, unfortunately. I didn't intend to pick it off. But you can see it's got 2, 4, 6 seeds inside this one. That's those dark spots down through there. But it will produce plants from those seeds when you plant them in the springtime. It is a gorgeous plant. And as I said, probably the best thing about it is that it has this incredible fragrance. We've got a few of you came on all at the same time and guessed it right. Christine did, of course. Christine, I know you're a bit of a fan of these. Tyson did, well done. Annie, you did. JB, you did. Jen, you did. Jess, you've all done very, very well. I don't know how many of you are growing it, but it is without doubt one of the most beautiful climbers. Hardy plants, grows in a lovely big pot in my garden, and I will be collecting seed this year because I think it's generally about a 4-year sort of lifespan with it, and then it sort of tends to get a bit woody, and after that you want to replace them. So mine at the moment is probably year two coming up to year three, and I'll be collecting all the seed when it produces seed this year with view to obviously taking it to the next level. All right, that's my plant of the week. Now, what are we thinking? We're going to go to a Garden Express offer. Would you like to have a look at this deal? Are we going to play a clip? Yep, okay, here we go. Let me introduce you to a plant that's making a huge comeback. It's an incredibly good gift with Mother's Day just a couple of weeks away. Now, what makes these so special now and why they've become so trendy is because there's been some incredible breeding done to improve the colours and also the consistency and growth of these plants. They're disease resistant, they do incredibly well. The second thing that people love about them is they're incredibly good value. They are, of course, chrysanthemums. I've made the journey to Flora Plant Nursery, a wholesale grower supplying leading garden centres with the highest quality plants, and Richard Deckers is the owner. Richard, these chrysanthemums are absolutely magnificent, but it didn't happen by accident. This is actually a bit of manipulation of Mother Nature at her very best, of the environment. Tell us about how you do that.
Yeah, so what we do is we shorten the day length. Mm-hmm. So a short day length makes a chrysanthemum flower, and a long day length vegetates a chrysanthemum.
So if we're growing into summer, we're producing lots and lots of growth, but no flower. As we start to head into winter, you're finding those days are getting shorter, and this triggers the flowering process.
Yeah, this triggers the plant to set bud.
One of the things that I'm really conscious of is the breeding that goes into these plants. It's not just about the number of flowers or the shape or size. It's also about disease resistance and so on. And this is where that company, Doom and Orange, world-leading breeding company, and selectors of really high quality plants have come into play. You do a lot of work with them?
Yes, we do. So we've been buying from breeders in Holland for many, many years, and we've selected Doom and Orange for exactly that reason. They're so professional in making sure the plants are nice and compact, strong, heavy bud count, disease resistance, and all the things we want from a chrysanthemum.
Now, speaking of flower, there's lots of variation in the different types of flowers. So there's doubles and singles, and these are the types of collections that people can look out for.
Yeah, that's correct. So we have a daisy collection, which is a straight colour.
Yep.
We have a daisy collection, which is bicoloured. Mm-hmm. And then we have the double flowering varieties.
And obviously this is the ultimate Mother's Day gift. Have you got any tips for people on how to get the best results with them at home?
Once you get this home, I would put it in your kitchen or on a coffee table or windowsill or something like that. Put it in a nice ceramic pot. Water it every 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. You'll get about 6 weeks, 7 weeks. After that, you can choose to put it in your garden, prune it back or do something else with it.
Now these plants are likely to be found in your local garden centre. But the easiest way to show them these days is online. And if you jump online now to gardenexpress.com.au, they'll have a super special deal for you. And best of all, they deliver these direct to your door or to Mum's door if she lives somewhere else, anywhere in Australia. Well, there you go. Great, an absolutely great plant. I love chrysanthemums, and the new generation of chrysanthemums, the genetics that sits in them, is simply amazing. The colours, the breeding is just remarkable. And the disease resistance as a consequence of that breeding process is the difference between really getting great success and probably being disappointed at times. There is a very special deal that you can take advantage with that Garden Express deal, and that is they've got some different collections. They've got the pot collection, chrysanthemum collection. It's a pack of four. $39.60 is the normal price, down to $27.70. There's the Pot Mum Breeze collection, which are absolutely gorgeous again, the Crystal collection, and also the Novelty collection. There's four different collections. They come in packs of four, normally $35, $24.90. It's a really good deal. And, of course, what's really remarkable about this offer is that you can book these and just get them delivered direct to Mum or to somebody who you love and care for, who you want to make their day, because they're just a beautiful plant and they really are wonderful indoors. Last for 6 or 7 weeks, more often than not, in flower before you cut the flowers off and plant them out in your garden. Chrysanthemums, now that there's this new genetics, it's a big breakthrough. They're a lot better plant in a garden and certainly great in a pot. But, of course, with Mother's Day, I thought there's a good one for you. And thanks very much to our friends at Garden Express for coming up with such a great deal. If you want to order that, remember, it's gardenexpress.com.au, 24/7. They will deliver direct to your door. Let's keep going. We have now 6 minutes to go, and I have a lot of questions here to belt through, so I will do my very best to answer all your questions. Here we go. Charmaine's in Mount Barker. Do you have any fact sheets, et cetera, on companion planting? We do. Actually, if you just go to our website, Google fact sheets, go to the fact sheets, put into the search engine companion planting. There are a lot of examples of different types of companion planting that you can do. I've also written a number of books over the years, and there's always sections in each of the books about the ones that are best to be planted. And depending on where you are, they will be readily available. You can also order them online with us. Lynn Winstanley, you are in Claremont. That's in WA. Can you tell me the best time to give my jasmine creeper a good prune, please? Lynn, probably not now. Depends on the type of jasmine, but most of them are coming into flower. If it's the Azores jasmine, Jasminum azoricum, you could trim that back because it flowers consistently all through the year. But you don't want to be cutting some of them back when they're going to come into flower during the winter, like the winter jasmine, for example. So I would leave it to the middle of summer, and then I would give them a prune. I wouldn't prune them too hard. Small amounts on a regular basis is a far better way to go. Tyson, you've asked me a really good question. Where can you get the snail creeper, the snail vine that I just showed you? Only from really good garden centres, and it's probably worthwhile jumping on the phone, calling around to find, because it's not a common plant. It's a real collectible. But once you've got it, as I said, collect the seeds, because that'll really, really help. Okay. And Heather Cow from Jandabup also asked the same question. I know in WA, in local garden centres at the moment, there are a number of them that have it. Probably the one that I always go to get these kinds of really rare plants here in Perth is Guildford Town Nursery, and of course Joan Harris, who you know from hosting this show. That's Joe's Nursery, and they're celebrating just 30 years. It's a big deal. They've been open. It's an amazing achievement. But she collects all these rare and collectible plants. maybe you can get it off her if you live in Perth. You might be able to get it off her if you live somewhere else in the country, because they also have an online shop as well. So have a look at that. Vicky McGregor, you are in Sydney. Looking for recommendations of native trees with non-invasive roots. There's a sewer pipe about 2.5 metres from where we'll plant it. Full sun position, clay soil, MacArthur region of Sydney. Looking for a maximum height of 5 to 6 metres. Will be a feature tree in your backyard. There is a lily pili. It's called Lumanii. It's a weeping lily pili. It's got beautiful pink foliage, very large, plump purple fruit that you can actually eat as well. That would be what I would recommend. It's highly unlikely that lily pili will put its roots into the sewer pipe unless your sewer pipe is leaking. And then there's not many plants that won't go towards that water and nutrient. So, but if it's in the ground and it's a sealed pipe, which it should be, this won't be a problem. 2.5 metres is actually quite a long distance, 10 feet. Whilst there'll be some root growth around it, it's never going to hurt that pipe, so you wouldn't worry about it. So lily pili, Lumanii, it's the weeping lily pili. It's an absolutely gorgeous plant and well worthwhile looking at. Catherine Jeffries, you're in Mount Waverley in Victoria, getting a bit cooler there now. I'm looking for advice on how to rid mushrooms that are popping up in a large grassy area in the lawn. Now, any information would be so okay. Mushrooms, it's natural for them to be appearing this time of the year. So the moisture levels come up and everybody's experiencing it. There are different types. There's some of the edible varieties and some funguses that you don't want to be eating because they do have toxins in them. If you don't like them, you could either do one or two things. You can hang on for a little while. And what I mean by that is give it another month. They'll go through their natural cycle. You'll see what we call fairy rings appear. They just keep spreading and then they'll pretty much disappear. They'll have eaten all the fungus, organic matter in the soil. That's what they're doing as a food source. And then they'll die out, leave this spore in the soil, and in a year's time they'll start to reappear. You can lime the soil if you want to get rid of fungus. If you have too much lime, it tends to burn them out a little bit. But you do change the pH of your soil as you do that. So it's up to you. There is a bit of a risk there that you might set the garden back a little bit if you put too much in. Personally, my advice would be just put up with it for the next month or so and they'll disappear. Kerry McClure, good question. So you're in Rolling Stone. Is the snail vine a full sun plant? Absolutely loves full sun. Really important that you actually grow it in a full sun position. And as I said, mine's actually in a pot. You can grow them in the ground. Got to have a good trellis. This is a climber, so it's a vine. It's a tendril climber. It'll move up and cover really quite quickly. So, hopefully that helps. Kathy Borg, I'm not sure where you're from. Wonder if it can help. My mum's got a few indoor plants. She keeps getting these tiny little back bugs like fleas. Even if we spray, insect spray or kill them, they keep coming back in advance. That's because you're using a potting mix that has organics in it. When you're doing indoor plants, there's a great product from Osmocote. It's a 10-litre bag, great package. It's an indoor potting mix. It has no organics in it as such, no bark, I should say. Bark is the food source for those little bugs. Those little bugs are actually flies and they're fungus gnats, and they will fly around and they'll be there because they're laying their eggs in the soil. And even though you might spray the adults off, the next generation will hatch and appear. You can get a fungus gnat barrier from Yates, and it's a type of granular that you spread over the top of the pot, and that'll stop them. It's almost like a barrier, stop them coming in and also coming out. It's probably my solution for you without having to change the soil over. Vanessa Morton, not sure where you're from. How do I grow garlic and coriander? Well, now's the time to be planting both of them, which is really good news. Coriander, garlic loves cold conditions. It'll grow right through and you'll harvest in October, November if you're planting your garlic cloves out now. Coriander, best time of the year to be planting coriander, because coriander loves cool conditions. A lot of people think it's associated with Thai food, think it's that it's a tropical plant, but in actual fact, it's a cool climate plant. So really important that you plant your coriander this time of the year. There's a couple of different types too. It's one called Slow Bolt. That's the one I'd get. It'll stop them, sometimes if there's lots of nitrogen in the soil, they'll grow, produce flowers and seed, and you don't get a lot of foliage. If you get the Slow Bolt one, you'll end up with a lot of foliage, which is predominantly what you'll use in cooking. Albeit you can use the roots, the leaves, and the flowers and seeds of coriander. Okay, this is our last question. Thanks very much, everybody, for tuning in today. Please bring back your great garden magazine. I remember it from years ago, actually. I've got one sitting around here somewhere. We did produce that magazine for many years. Unfortunately, distribution of magazines has declined. People were not supporting it, and we just weren't able to keep funding it, unfortunately. It is a great source of information. It was so much fun writing it. And I would love to bring it back. Maybe we can do a little quarterly or something like that and have people subscribe. That's a really good point. Thanks so much for bringing that up, and I really appreciate your kind comments about the magazine. This week's lucky winner of the $50 gift voucher from Garden Express is Mattia Jayarinda. Thank you very much, Mattia. You're in Balcombe Hills. That was that red coconut story. Love that. Really difficult plant to grow. If you've got it in a pot, keep it in the pot, I reckon. Absolutely lovely. Congratulations. To claim your prize, all you have to do is just send just messages actually on Facebook with your email address, and we'll come back to you. Shaylee will let you know. The Troforte code word, I'm not going without telling you what that is. Here it is, mulch. That's right. If you go to the Troforte Facebook page, like it. You'll see the link in the description of this live. And like and just make sure that you do like their page, and then put your answer in. Good luck, because it's such a great prize. $250 will keep your garden fed really well for the next 12 months or so at least. Now, that is it. Remember, look, thanks so much for your support. Please hit the like button wherever you can. It really helps us. Today we've had a lot of questions, and we may have missed yours. If we have, I will make sure I answer them for you next week. And if you've got something that's a bit difficult and needs to be described in a certain way, send us a photo. Always helps. We are going to be back next week with another live show. And if you want any information, anything at all, in the meantime, you can simply go to our website. It's thegardengurus.tv. And, of course, there's fact sheets and video clips and all sorts of links that will help you. And if you just want to watch some great content that's been produced, check out our YouTube channel. Become a follower. It's a really good source of information, and all of our programs go up there. thegardengurus.tv on YouTube. And we are coming up to episode 7 of the Garden Gurus TV show 2 on Channel 9. Of course, it's this Saturday. Pretty sure it's 4:30 everywhere, but just check your local guide just to make sure you don't miss out. There's been a couple of times when things have pushed programs forward or back, and some people have missed out. So just make sure you do that. If you do miss out, don't forget, you can always check it out on 9now.com.au, where the whole series is up and available for you to watch. Wow, big, busy show. We've gone 5 minutes past 10 and here in the West, of course. And it's been great. I really appreciate you joining us. I am Trevor Cochrane. I really look forward to seeing you all next week. Big thanks to the team here for producing it again. Great show. We'll see you soon.